Hello, everyone, and welcome to Not Quite Hollywood, episode 53. I'm Jamie.
I'm Alex.
I'm Tim.
Hey, Tim. Hi. Alex, how's it going?
Tim's back.
Tim is back. We're all in the same room, which is nice.
We are.
No bullshit editing trickery.
Hey.
No. I mean, like, I did one at the end where Alex and I signed off, and then you're like, bye. Threw you in there at the last minute.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was That's great. Funny. We are a weekly podcast. Every odd episode, like today, we talk about a film, each bringing one to the table. Because we missed Tim last odd episode, we are going to talk about his communal film, My Week with Marilyn. Then we're going to talk about Alex's communal film,
The Discovery.
And then my non-communal film is Colossal. So stay tuned for those. We'll start with... Yeah, let's start with Tim. My Week with Marilyn.
My Week with Marilyn.
So why'd you pick this film? This was your top film of 2011 in our list.
Yeah, I didn't actually watch it again after we talked about it. So when I watched it, I didn't know who Eddie Redmayne was. I didn't know who Michelle Williams was, necessarily. Right. I always had, like, a fascination with Marilyn Monroe. Not because I was like, oh, she's amazing, but I just... Something about her felt, like, fascinating. When I watched it, I was like, she's not a good person. She was she was not talented. She used people. I don't think she realized she did. But there was still something about her that you still want to root for her. And something about that in itself for me was so, like, intriguing about just her in general. And seeing Michelle Williams just kill that role was fucking amazing. And then to see Eddie Redmayne, like, just kind of pop on screen, and that's what really put him on the map. I just thought it was such a beautiful, simple story. There was nothing that was like, oh my God. I don't know. I don't know how to describe that. Like, it was just so simple, and it felt so authentic.
Well, you touched upon a lot of points. Yeah, she was totally this kind of... She used people like toys and playthings, and she was very innocent and childlike in that regard, too. So she didn't assume what she was doing was wrong, but... Yeah, like every guy who was on the set, like, yeah, don't trust her. I had my time with her, like my few days with her, and like she just like picks you up and drops you off like you're a little toy. And
then the guys who didn't have that were like, I want her.
Yeah, but they didn't know why it was a bad thing.
I don't know what it was about that movie, but that's like the only one that stood out from that year. And then when I thought about it again, I was like, oh man, I really want to see it again. What did you guys think about it? Because I
liked it. I didn't know that... Marilyn Monroe was not that great of an actress. Like, I didn't know that she, like, struggled that much. And it was crazy to see that about her. And Michelle Williams was awesome. I mean, I really liked her in Blue Valentine and all that. So I've been meaning to see this movie, and she was really, really good.
Did they touch on the subway grate scene?
No.
So the subway grate scene, like, you know, the classic her dress thing, that took, I don't remember how many takes. It was, like, in the 50 to 60s take on set in New York. And they still couldn't get it right, so they had to do it here in a soundstage. That's kind of her MO, is that she can't get anything right on set, pretty much, so people have to really work around her. Like, someone actually had a theory, there are a couple people that we remember who aren't necessarily all that talented, but then we just see them as these icons, and Marilyn Monroe was the first one. Because
Paris Hilton tried for years.
Paris Hilton, I mean, she's... a very smart woman. And her face and all that voice stuff, if you're not around cameras, drops. Because she's a complete businesswoman.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, the whole thing that she's doing now with that super hydration drop thing, have you seen that yet?
I don't know, because it was Paris Hilton.
I know, but it was just on Facebook. And it's actually a thing where it's going all to charity. And so I'm like, she's doing some good stuff.
That's good.
When I see her now, like, she's not like a Jenner type thing. She's a little bit... more of like a business person.
What I was going to allude to is that I used to despise her and her act or whatever. And then the Kardashians came around. And I found a new hatred that I had never felt before.
On that list was Kim Kardashian. It was like, no one knows why she's famous. Because she's not talented. And like, I have friends who saw the sex tape and they're like, it wasn't even that good. They're like, that's not a reason for her to be making this much money.
Yeah.
But people, like, everyone knows who she is. Like, I don't even know how she looks like, but I know her name.
Oh, really?
I don't know how she looks like at all. Like, if I see any of the Kardashians or if I see any of the Jenners, I'll be like, I don't know who's who.
Yeah, I don't know them really that well either.
Yeah, like, I was Chloe.
See, every time I see them on TV, I turn the TV off and I go in the shower and cry for about 3 hours. Then I'm fine. That's enough Kardashian talk for the rest of this podcast ever.
That's true.
But
going back to Marilyn,
I think I was telling you that while we were watching. I was like, there's nobody since Marilyn Monroe that has had this level of fame. You know, just everything about that movie is like,
I think they
did so much to get her there. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, and it's. I think it was a newer thing right around her time. Like, the whole sex appeal thing was so new.
Mm-hmm.
Because before that, things were a lot less scandalous in that way. She wasn't the typical proper woman, and that's kind of what made her sexy. Because right now, in this day and age, everything is so sexualized.
There's not one person that embodies that. It's everything.
Yeah, and like the sex symbol, we don't have a sex symbol other than someone like Kardashian because of her sex tape. You know, like there's no comparison to, like, because the way that people view like sexual attractiveness about a person has turned into something far less elegant. And I think that's another thing that is the reason why you're not going to find something where when someone walks in the room, everyone stops.
You're right, though. There is no comparison. Kim. Get out of here. They brought it up in the movie. Like, so it's based on the real shoot. I can't remember the name of the film. Laurence Olivier. I think he wrote it and directed it and starred in it with her. This film, like, they said it in the film where it's like, wow, when she gets it right, it's like magic on screen. But it takes so much work to get that out of her. But yeah, you only ever saw that in films growing up. There wasn't a lot of like the TMZ or E! Hollywood News shit. It was just like you saw what was on screen. The majority of people did. There were like gossip rags and stuff. But
it was never a thing where people only saw what you put up on screen. It wasn't on display as it is now.
And then also even in the dailies, when they're watching the dailies, they're like, this is amazing.
But see, again, like, but when you watch her performance, too, again, it's not like a stunning thing. It was just, I think, something about her beauty on camera
that
just captivated people. And that's what fascinated me. And then also, I think what I liked about what My Week with Marilyn did was that it went into her as well and how she dealt with all that stuff. Sometimes when people say this and I'm just like, I won't punch you, but then I totally understand. Because I will never understand when people are like, you know, it's hard being very attractive. And I'm like, shut up. Yeah. Because things are a lot easier for you. But then at the same, like, there was this monologue that someone did where it was like, I know I'm pretty. I'm very pretty. But it fucking sucks. Because, like, she's going to the supermarket and she sees the same guy following her around. And then she, like, tries to bump into her to make conversation. And then follows her out to her car. People don't leave people alone, and they feel like they have a right to them because they're attractive.
Yeah.
And it's a whole different struggle than people who are invisible. And so for someone like Marilyn Monroe, who's in that spotlight, and who's not necessarily mentally stable, I just feel like that would have, I mean, that definitely would have done a number on her.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. And yeah, it was really well acted, too. Just seeing all these different actors, like, a person who I have always loved since I had seen him. He's kind of like Dan Stevens, where he's finally getting more big meaty roles. And yeah, Dominic Cooper, who played super young Howard Stark in Agent Carter, and he is Preacher now.
Yeah, Dominic Cooper.
I love him, and he's in there, and he's one of those guys that were warning Eddie Redmayne, do not be with her.
Yeah. I thought, that's why, like, this entire time, I was like, I remember there was that one guy, and I always thought he was Carl Urban. He kind of looks like Carl Urban.
I mean, in a way.
Like a young Carl Urban.
So we should talk about the discovery, and we're talking spoilers.
So I will be back.
Yeah, we don't want to ruin it for Tim. He said we could, but we do not want to ruin this for him.
It's fine. I'll be in my trailer.
Do you have like your phone or something to use?
I do.
Okay. So the discovery. Alex, take it away.
Okay. So I watched the discovery. I was super excited to see it because it was a Sundance. And the trailers looked awesome, and I was like, Jason Segel in a drama? This is weird. So I really wanted to check it out. It was really, really good. It was very thought-provoking. Definitely thought about it for the rest of the day. I was surprised that I wasn't thinking about it the whole week, but I kind of forgot about it a little bit. It was like it didn't stick with me as much as I thought, but definitely that day I was on it. It was definitely a very unique kind of movie. The Discovery is about Jason Segel, and he is the son of this guy who discovers that there is an afterlife, and he comes up with scientific proof that there is an afterlife, and the whole movie is about him trying to record somebody's mind that has already died, and so he can get a recording of the afterlife. So basically there's mass suicide going on, because since there's proof that there is an afterlife, people are just killing themselves trying to get there. So Jason Segel feels really bad the whole movie about it. When they're trying to record it, he sees that the device worked, and he keeps the secret from his dad because he feels like if he tells his dad, he'll tell the world and then there will be more mass suicide. And so he tries to investigate the recording and ends up discovering that...
Yeah, it's like a reset, and you're able to relive the life within through another person. It's almost like a multiverse theory, but then it's not.
Well, I think it was you relive the memory that you regret the most.
Well...
Didn't they say that out up front? Because the dad relived the mom's suicide, and then that guy relived when he went to visit his dad in the hospital, the first guy.
Theory. Well, just because it seems that they relive, it's almost like it's modern day interpretation of the Buddhist nirvana. Like you're reliving your life, trying to make it better, become a better person until you've succeeded, you've reached nirvana. So when he saved Rooney Mara at the end, like legit saved her, like the... She had said in his dream, this is the first time you'd ever saved me from killing myself. And that was all that needed to happen in this life because he tried so many times before. And there was something cool about that. So when he was dying, he could access these memories, these dreams that his mind was creating. Like, oh yeah, you've done this a lot now. And Rooney Mara is speaking through that, of course. And, you know, it's like when you have a dream and you're sleeping and you wake up, you can't remember it. Sometimes if you fall back asleep, you're able to continue the dream. And then I've done that where you remember it again, and it's like, oh yeah, that's where I was. It's like you forgot where you left off in a book and a page, and like you find it, like, oh yeah, I can look back now, read the page before, catch up, and go. You know, with this kind of thing, it was really interesting because of the fact that it had that nirvana element, but it was almost like an alternate reality, because when you saw the guy that had died in the morgue, you could see his tattoo was different in the memory. So it wasn't necessarily the same universe. To me, it was almost like a...
Oh, yeah, it was alternate, but it was like he could change the things that he wanted to. It was an alternate universe. It wasn't like you relived your whole life. It was like the thing that you regret the most.
I just thought it was interesting. So after Jason Segel stopped what he regretted the most, and in that not letting Rooney Mara kill herself, my question is, what happens? So at the end, he went to the next one. He's like, I want to remember you. Wherever I go, I want to remember you. So he goes to, it's almost like he goes to her most regretted moment and saves her son from drowning.
Yeah, and this is where I was like, okay. So when I saw it, the whole son thing, you and I both thought it was him.
Yeah, at first, because he drowned.
He
and nearly
almost
died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that's when he said he saw something, and he told his dad, and his dad started investigating and made the discovery.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what triggered it, his near-death experience. So when he saved the kid, I thought he was saving himself from drowning, which it turned out it was just her kid. And so I thought that was really weird that, like, her kid was, you know, almost drowned just like he did. But then also, I was thinking, like, his biggest regret should have been telling his dad about his vision, because that would have saved everybody from committing suicide. The whole movie, he was all sad and like he didn't want to be a part of the discovery, and his dad was like, you and I did this together. And he was like, no, I didn't do this. And he was like, you know, he was clearly regretting it. And it's like, why wasn't his biggest regret, as much as he loved that girl, I was fine with him saving her. But then even the backup one, like, you know, he went to save her kid. Well, why not save everybody? I mean, I know it's not literal, it's on his head, but like, I would think that would be the biggest thing.
It would have made a more perfect closure to the film. But then it kind of would have been a paradox in a way. Not that it's necessarily time travel, but in that reality, it would have been altered. Where he never would have drowned and, started the whole thing.
It's a pretty big plot hole, though, don't you think?
I don't think it's a plot hole. I think it's just what you expected it to happen, and then they did something different. Right before he died that time in the boat, he said, wherever I go, I want to remember you. So he essentially like lived in her biggest regret. It wasn't necessarily trying to fix everything. It wasn't trying to rectify this entire mess. I mean, he could have, and that could have been a good way to go. But I mean, they went a different way. And I get mad like that sometimes too. I'm like, why didn't they do this? Like, it would have been a great ending. But then that's not what they're going for. They didn't want to stop the whole thing. Make the movie irrelevant. It was one of the tightest scripts I had ever seen unfold on film. The lines, the dialogue were so beautiful, like eloquent.
Yeah, and I liked it a lot. I didn't think it was one of the tightest scripts just because of that. I thought it was a pretty obvious thing they should have addressed, but
it was definitely
MacGuffin. I liked it a lot, yeah.
I think maybe they even did that on purpose to make you think he was going to save himself.
Uh-huh.
Because you don't even see the kid's face for a while.
Well, even, I was thinking it might have even been a metaphor for him trying to save himself. Because I had this whole theory that, it was her kid, but in a sense, it was also him. I don't know. I mean, I do think they did that on purpose where you didn't see his face for a while.
So then that means that they even thought about that and didn't want to do it. The movie is... I just love the movie so much.
Mm-hmm.
It really just surprised me because the first trailer I saw, the first... maybe the second trailer, they really went into the romantic route. I'm like, I don't like this.
Oh, really?
This doesn't feel right.
Like, I thought it felt like a horror in the first trailer.
No, the first trailer, sure. But no, the second trailer, because they had more of like the romantic side. I'm like, that's just... they're using this... it's like The Purge. They're using this badass idea and they're going to fuck it up. They're going to use it for some stupid way and not use it to its fullest potential.
Mm-hmm.
Then, oh, here's a fucking great movie. Like, it blew me away. Like, everything. They've shot really well. Like, the way they depicted recordings of the afterlife was really cool, too. So,
mm-hmm.
That opening seems great, too, with Mary Steenburgen.
Mm-hmm.
The interviewer. Oh man, some great implications in that stuff. So,
and I do think there's definitely a lot more places to go with this idea too. Where they went was cool, but I think they could have also done in making the discovery or like there was just so much they could do with it.
That's the great thing with an idea like this. There are so many avenues. That means it's a good idea. It's mm-hmm. a great idea. But I think we should get Tim back in the room now.
Yeah,
and we'll talk about Colossal.
Tim's back.
Cool.
So. Let's talk about my film now. That is the new Colossal. Now, Colossal is very limited, so we're not going to go into spoilers, really. And Tim has not seen it yet.
And I'm going to see it today.
Yeah, so. But the film is written, directed by Nacho Vigalondo. He's done a lot for already, but this is one of his first few American-speaking films. And
English language?
Yeah, that's the one. English.
I was like, American-speaking.
I was like, did he do American films that were silent?
I know about this. I was like, wait a second.
This is the first American talkie. He's done Spanish talkies. So in this film, Anne Hathaway plays Gloria, where she's like this down and out drunk. She comes home every night in her New York City apartment to her boyfriend, or mostly every morning. Wasted off her ass. He dumps her, tells her to go figure shit out, and she goes home, and she...
Who plays the boyfriend?
Dan Stevens.
Oh, I love Mr. Beast himself. Dan Stevens.
Mr. David from The Guest.
Mm.
And,
yes.
Yeah, Dan Stevens plays his original British accent, which is great.
Yeah.
Love that. It's rare.
I didn't recognize him at first.
Yeah, but he has a really good American accent, too. Like, it's really disturbing and haunting. I haven't seen Beauty and the Beast, so his voice is probably pretty British there.
It's so modulated, though.
Oh, yeah. Until the end. So Anne Hathaway meets her elementary school friend, Oscar, and he has a couple friends played by, Jason Sudeikis is Oscar, and then his friends are Tim Blake Nelson and Austin Stowell. When she wakes up in the morning, there's this destruction in Seoul, South Korea, and she's not sure what happened, but she's mortified, like heartbroken that all these people are dying. And then it turns out she finds out very quickly that it is her controlling the monster.
And that is not a spoiler.
No, that's in the trailer. But it's interesting, like, way to embody the idea behind her mental breakdown. I'll link to it in the show notes. My We Need Movies review of this just posted a few days ago. And I had a hard time finding the theme and what they meant by that exactly without spoiling anything. I'm not sure if they left it more open to interpretation. I did kind of settle on one over the other, but it's interesting because A, that happened, and then B, the movie takes a great turn, and Jason Sudeikis has one of the most fascinating roles he's ever had. And I think his role stands out above Anne because Anne's done, you know, better acting before. It's not that she's terrible in this, but Jason gets this time to shine, and it's, holy shit, man, he's powerful. I'll leave it at that. It's hard not to talk spoilers in this thing, by the way.
It is.
I'm excited.
What, you said you were disappointed at first when we got out.
Well, yeah. Well, I came out of the theater saying, huh. And I really legitimately said, huh. I'm like, what do I think of this? I had to think about it for a while. I would watch it again.
I would not. I liked it, but there was a good 20 minutes. The last third, I thought, should have just been cut out. Like, it's like there's this whole chunk where it's like, why is this even here? And I was just bored, and I was like, can we, like, get to the point, you know? And it was like, you know, just for that part alone, I was like, I probably wouldn't watch it again. It was super interesting. All the rest of it was great. It was a super unique idea with her, you know, being the monster. And it wasn't, like, a serious... it was serious. But, you know, it was, like, kind of a making fun of monster movies a little bit kind of a thing. Like, in the beginning...
I don't think that's the case.
No?
I think they just used that idea in a fun way.
Well, I mean, it wasn't like they weren't going over the top with the, oh, we need to make this look so real with the effects. Like, it was obvious that it was kind of...
Wasn't this also slightly independent?
It was.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I really, really enjoyed it.
You had mentioned the film had this 20 minutes or so that could have been cut, and I feel as though that situation and some of the characters involved were relegated to plot devices just to move the plot forward. Because I had mentioned the scene, what they could have easily cut around wouldn't have been more impactful to the bait and switch had they not had that prequel there.
The bar scene, the last bar scene, I thought was totally pointless.
It was totally pointless.
It like came out of nowhere.
It doubled down on that character's personality. Like, you thought it was kind of going to come around again. No, this is like, okay, no, he's... Yep. I mean, so hard again, I'm not
gonna... I know. But, like, I don't know. It was good. It was interesting. If you like monster movies, go see it. If you like any movies, go see it.
But if you don't like movies, don't go see
it. I don't know.
If you like personal home theater with your children, go see it.
I thought the metaphor was the monster was her alcoholism. I think it was just as simple as that. I know you were trying to
get into it a little bit
more. I think we're disagreeing a lot today. This is fun.
Totally don't think it was that.
So I think the monster was her alcoholism, and then... Fuck,
nope.
I want to say something.
Nope.
I'm not going to say
it. You can't say it. I know what you're going
to say. Okay. I'll see it today. Okay,
but that's the thing. It could be interpreted that way.
Yeah, so that's what I thought. I thought it was as simple as that, but I get that it can represent a lot of other things. And
they try explaining how this happened to her. I didn't really care for that. They could have just left that alone and not mention it, like Groundhog Day. Like, don't explain what happened, just have it happen.
I thought it would have been funny if they're in the park and the people were cheering. You could hear them cheering at the TV. I thought it would have been funny if one of them looked out the window and was like, wait a second. It's like the same thing. You know what I'm saying? They looked out their window and saw them.
Is that vague? I mean, I wouldn't go any further than that.
Yeah. No. That's it. I'm done.
It's so hard to talk about this film without even mentioning much more than the trailer. Because I'll tell you one thing. The trailer definitely does a great job of not giving you as much as you think it does. There's another turn after the trailer. It's like, oh, shit. Okay, cool. This is really interesting. I just wish they had more of like a character development for some characters. Like Tim Blake Nelson, he kind of just disappears. Tim just kind of disappears. It's like, oh, shit.
From Holes, right?
Huh?
He was in Holes. That guy?
I never watched Holes. I mean, he's from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And other films that are better than Holes.
That's the one.
I mean,
that's the one.
It's from The Incredible Hulk.
Better than Holes.
Orifices.
Come on. All right, let's move on.
Yeah. Okay. So that's...
Because I got
orifices.
And finally for the episode, I want to talk about the film this week for 52 Pickup. One that Alex said last episode he would be on his list. And that was A Goofy Movie.
Oh, nice.
You know what? I've only seen the extremely goofy movie.
Oh, no.
I've seen the original Goofy movie.
Yeah, Orifice is goofy. Oh, yeah. I can't do it.
God.
Oh, Max. Get out of there. I can't do it. Extremely goofy movie does not have the heart of the first film.
That's what people say, and I've just never seen it. Because, again, in China, we had very limited movies, and that was one of them.
A Goofy Movie is... It's funny, because they started making it in 1992, when Goof Troop came out as a TV show. They were going to have a movie tie-in.
Was it a Goofy Movie in theaters?
Oh, yeah. I watched it in theaters.
Okay. I always saw it on Disney.
No, that's, like, legit. I watched it in theaters. It's fucking great. I grew up watching... see, I didn't have Disney. We would get these free weekend previews for Disney, because for a while, it was almost like a paywall. I don't know why Disney was ever, like, behind a paywall. I had Nickelodeon all my life. But Disney in my area...
A subscription.
Well, in my area, you had to pay extra for it.
Huh.
I don't know why. So they have free previews like they would have like Showtime or HBO. Yeah. It's really bizarre. So I would never really get to see a lot of Disney stuff. So as I got older, like waiting in the morning before high school, my brother and I would watch old classic Disney cartoons. And
Even Stevens?
No, cartoons, man.
Oh, cartoons.
The ones that I couldn't watch as a kid. I did watch Even Stevens, but that's besides the point.
DuckTales.
Better than Holes. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. Shia? No.
I love me some Shia.
But one of my favorite cartoon series was when Goofy was with a narrator telling you how to set something up or how to do this, like a how-to video. And it was always fucking... He would always fuck it up somehow. And so Goof Troop was one of my favorite like Disney shows when I finally got a hold of it. And then A Goofy Movie was like, I gotta see this in theaters. This is great.
because Goofy is like definitely my favorite Disney cartoon character in that era. So Mickey, Minnie, Pluto, Goofy, and of course Donald.
Thank you. I was like, what is his name? For a minute.
Yeah. This film, yeah, so it's him and his son, Max, who was introducing Goof Troop, so he was very new at the time. And they go on like a father-son road trip. And it has like these, it's a musical partially. It has a lot of good songs.
That's right.
So you'd like it. I mean, it's really heartfelt and touching. I mean, there's some really sad like, bonding moments and some like really like, oh God, they're fighting. It's like so frustrating like, to see that because everybody's had like even a minor scuffle with their parents. So to see this is just really like, hits home.
Bigfoot's in it, right?
Oh, you're just spoiling it for Tim.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, yes, a cartoon.
If you haven't seen him by now.
That's true. If I haven't seen it by now.
22 years it's been out.
Jesus Christ.
I know. Sad. I'll link it in the show notes. There is a cool video. There is the 20th anniversary at I think the Disney Expo, or what's it called? It's an expo of some kind, and they had the Goof Troop or Goof Movie reunion. So they had like Jason Marsden, who I grew up watching in Step by Step. You ever see Step by Step? It was one of those TGIF shows, like right near Family Matters and Boy Meets World. Anyway, he played the best friend. He's been in everything Disney. He did Disney's commercial voiceovers for a long time. I think he might still do them. He's been in a lot of...
that guy.
Yeah, that guy, exactly. He does a lot of those kinds of roles, like best friends and movies and TV. And he's not related to James Marsden, who played Cyclops, but I learned this recently. Their wives are like either best friends or sisters. So they inadvertently hang out now because of that. Really fucked up. I'm getting off topic. Point is, the movie is really fucking great, and I recommend it highly. It is really funny. It holds up incredibly well. It's one of those older animations, so I watched it on Amazon. I don't know if there's like a Blu-ray version of it. I haven't checked, honestly. There could be, hopefully.
I recorded it on VHS from Disney Channel.
So it's high quality, you're saying?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All those tracking lines and everything.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
Yes.
You guys have both seen an extremely goofy movie.
Yes, and I've seen a goofy movie.
Yeah. How long has it been since you've seen a goofy movie?
12 years of.
Oh, well, okay, yeah. Because yeah. I hadn't seen it since maybe 2 years after it came out, so 97.
Wow. I would love to see it again. See? They did like the La La Land kind of thing, right? On the freeway, if I remember, the musical thing.
They did a musical on the highway, yeah.
Yeah.
So La La Land ripped them off.
Yeah.
I watched an extremely goofy movie a couple months ago, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because it popped up on Netflix, and I'm like, oh my God, we're watching this right now. And it was interesting because there were jokes that I did not catch when I was a kid.
Yeah. Oh,
where I was absolutely. Like, this is dirty. Wow. Kind of, and it was ridiculous. But then, like, for the most part, I was like, okay, I wouldn't watch this again.
Oh, yeah.
I could see why people were like, oh, it's not as good. I'm like,
yeah. I will shout out to the voice actors besides Jason Marsden. Bill Farmer, who does Goofy, has done Goofy for a while now. Sure, he's great and everything. But then Rob Paulsen is PJ, like his friend. And then Pete is fucking Jim Cummings. Like these are the guys I grew up with, the voice actors I grew up with.
Yeah.
And it really got me into like the voice acting side of like I'm like a fanboy over voice actors now. Like, you know, everybody from John DiMaggio to Billy West and Frank Welker and of course Rob Paulsen. It's just, oh man. I recommend it. I think you have to rent it because I couldn't find it in any streaming services, but
If you live in North Hollywood, go to Odyssey Video. And pick up your Goofy movie.
I don't think they even have it.
Probably not.
I don't think I've ever seen it on DVD. I had a VHS big box. I played it. I think I burned that fucking VHS. I used it so much. I watched that so many times. Oh, my brother and I would watch it so often. So that's Goofy Movie. Watch it. Look at the show notes for the interesting videos and stuff about it. And this has been episode 53. Where can they find you, Alex?
You can find me on Doggone Movie Reviews. Doggone Movie Reviews. You can... Sorry. Let's try that again.
It's a terrible word. Doggone is a shitty word.
Is it?
No, I'm just saying it's hard to say.
Yeah, it is.
I had to think about it. Like, doggone.
It's just like, by the way, Alex, your title for your review is just shitty. Just shit.
No, it's just hard to say. Like, I mumble all the time, so I don't like saying words like that. It's a good name.
It's a good name. It's just shit.
No.
Shit name.
Don't.
So yeah, you can find me at Doggone Movie Reviews. If you Google that and my name, you should be able to
find it. It's in the show notes.
Yeah. Yeah, that helps.
It's in there every week.
Yeah. Or you can follow me on Instagram, at me and my blazer. Or you can follow me on Snapchat, alexawesome123.
Oh, nice. You can find me on Instagram, Tim Jim Lim Artist, or on Snapchat at Tim Jim Limbo.
Oh, I like that.
Huh.
I like that a lot.
That's a really cool name. I like that. Damn it. Well, I couldn't have a cool name like that.
Just make it up.
I'm on Snapchat. I don't think I really use it much, so I wouldn't want to people to follow me.
I mean, my Snapchat's pretty much just me fucking around with filters, and that's like pretty much all I do.
Oh, that's all. Every time I share something in my story, that's all I ever share. It's just like me doing some really stupid voice and the stupid chat filter. Yeah. It's fun.
Like the only one that I'm like super proud of is they actually had a filter where they put a beard on my face, like a scruffy
five. I saw that. Shadow. I saw that picture.
And I was like, oh my god, I look really sexy with this beard. And so like I got biotin. I'm like scrubbing my face, like keeping it clean so it like facilitates beard growth, and I'm like so motivated to get my face looking like that. Not even kidding.
I know, I saw your Instagram post about it. So Instagram for me, really quick, Guy on a Wire, just like my website, guyonawire.com, where this post. You could also follow us on Twitter, NQHpod, on Facebook, where we are at Not Quite Hollywood, very simple. If you have any emails or discussions, you want to go into further spoilers for Colossal or
The Discovery
or My Week with Marilyn, super spoilerish, email us at notquitepod@gmail.com. And yeah, that is our show. Right. Subscribe on iTunes, and we will see you on the flip side. That's so 90s. Why would I say that?
Because we were just talking about the 90s.
That goofy movie, man. Fuck, it's okay. There's a lot of great 90s songs in that too, but in the meantime, I'm Jamie.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Tim.
Bye.
Bye.